Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, November 17th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Look on our donation tab, top right side of our website. Excuse me. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Epistle of the Ephesians, and it's the last chapter, chapter 6, read by Alexander Scorby, Ephesians 6.
Chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service, as men-pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. And take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints, and for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. But that ye also may know my affairs and how I do, Tychicus, a beloved brother and faithful minister in the Lord, shall make known to you all things, whom I have sent unto you for the same purpose, that ye might know our affairs, and that he might comfort your hearts. Peace be to the brethren, and love with faith, from God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Grace be with all them that love our Lord Jesus Christ in sincerity. Amen. The end of the Epistle of Paul the Apostle to the Ephesians.
Okay, Terry, do we have any questions tonight? Let me open up the queue first. If anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on the phone, it's a star 6 and a 1. Anybody else, app or browser, should be able to find a button to enter the queue. Terry, do we have any questions tonight? Can you hear me, Terry? Looks like your mic's open, but I don't hear nothing. All right, well, we'll give her a few minutes. Let me see here. Okay, again, everybody wants to get into the queue. We do have a couple of people in the queue. But before we get started, I'd like to look a little more at some information that we were reading out of the book, Memorandums of Common Law, and this was in the introduction. So this is on page 8 of that book, and again, it's part of the introduction to the book. And the title here is How the Judiciary Stole Our Republic and Courts of Law. We read, Esquires are taught and convinced that we are under Roman law and a democracy fashioned under Rome through outcome-based education. And having no proper K-12 education, they also, through an outcome-based education, receive the lie and are transformed unwittingly into the minions of the New World Order, and thereby covertly changed our republic in the minds of the people to a democracy, and our courts from common law courts to chancery courts. Their belief in what they have been taught is so strongly embedded into their minds that they are blinded to the truth being we're a common or natural law constitutional republic fashioned under Israel and the Bible, and that we the people, being sovereign, ordain the law. The following memorandums of law reveal how foreign banksters and barristers, hereinafter esquires, stole our courts and changed the republic to a democracy and enslaved we the people via a statutory prison constructed under Roman law, which was fashioned under Babylonian law. The destruction of our republic required an army of well-trained minions working diligently for the New World Order. They accomplished this by opening bar schools and over time convinced the people, little by little, that we're under civil law and not common law. This was initiated when the King of England sent swarms of esquires in 1750, when we were the 13 colonies, to change our courts of justice under God's law into chancery courts under man's law. This was solidified in 1938 when the bar steered United States Supreme Court under the supposed authority of the Rules Enabling Act, established the bar written Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and the states steered by the insidious bar followed suit, thus replacing common law with civil law throughout America. And this, of course, is true with the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Under the ABA's Rules Enabling Act in 1934, the 73rd Congress unlawfully enabled the United States Supreme Court the authority to prescribe rules under 28 U.S.C. Subsection 2072A, thereby allegedly abrogating the rules of common law. The United States Supreme Court and federal judiciary then covertly abused that authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land under Federal Rule 2. According to the Federal Judiciary Center, a government agency, on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its de facto authority under the Repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934, via Rule 2, which stated that the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits at common law were grouped together under the term civil action, claiming that a rigid application of common law rules brought about injustice. They also, over time, changed the republic in the minds of the people to a democracy. Our founding fathers were clear on two issues. One, we are not a democracy, and that, two, no republic can survive political parties. Only we, the sovereign people, can ordain and establish laws, and governments only we, the sovereign people, are endowed. Let me reread that. Only we, the sovereign people, can ordain and establish laws and governments. Only we, the sovereign people, are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. governments are not. Therefore, all latter construction upon the Organic Act of 1871 is as null and void as is the Act itself, which attempted to supplant a constitutional republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee by oath. Courts of law, let me see how much is here, because I just see people coming into the queue, so I don't want to spend too much time just reading. But I'd like to read this section here on the courts of record. There's quite a bit here, so we're only going to read the first part of this. Courts of law versus courts of chancery. Esquires covertly changed our constitutional courts of law to the repugnant chancery courts. In the United States, federal courts, magistrate judges, and judges appointed to assist U.S. district court judges in the performance of their duties. Magistrate judges generally oversee the first appearances of criminal defendants, set bail, and conduct other administrative duties. Magistrate judges are appointed by a majority vote of the federal district judges of a particular district. Administrative law judges, ALJs, resolve disputes in federal employment, acting as impartial adjudicators. They hear cases involving grievances and discrimination and disciplinary actions. ALJs handle a broad spectrum of federal employment disputes, including allegations of discrimination, retaliation against whistleblowers, and adverse employee actions. ALJs serve as neutral decision makers in employment proceedings, handling cases such as employee grievances and disciplinary actions. ALJ rulings shape federal employment policies by interpreting statutes and regulations in cases, in case context, influencing future policies and administrative practices. The same is true in any state court that is proceeding in equity under statutes or contract. Equity jurisdiction is a general sense the jurisdiction belonging to a court of equity, not more particularly the aggregate of those cases, controversies, and occasions which form proper subjects for the exercise of the power of a chancery court. Whenever any of the aforesaid equity courts sees jurisdiction in criminal cases or in suits of common law, they fraudulently proceed as summary proceedings. Whereas any proceeding by which a controversy is settled, case disposed of, or trial conducted in a prompt and simple manner, without the aid of a jury, without presentment or indictment, equity courts and law courts, the former being such as possess the jurisdiction of a chancellor, apply the rules and principles of chancery law, and follow the procedure in equity. The latter, such as have no equitable power, but administer justice according to the rules and the practices of the common law. The terms equity and chancery, courts of equity, and courts of chancery are constantly used as synonymous in the United States. Civil law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established particularly for itself, more properly called municipal law, to distinguish it from the laws of nature and from international law. Whenever any of the aforesaid chancery courts sees jurisdiction in a criminal case or in suits of common law, they fraudulently proceed with unlawful summary proceedings outside of the regular course of the common law. Such proceedings lack due process and are in violation of the following. Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, it's important to understand here that an infamous crime is not something that is understood by the act of the crime itself, but by the penalty that is applied upon it. What makes a crime infamous is if there's a jail sentence attached to it. They tried to change the meaning of that word because they claimed that an infamous crime is someone who has to go to jail for over a year. Anybody under a year, that's not an infamous crime, and therefore they believe they can put you in jail. And they don't have the power. These courts do not have the power to fine or incarcerate, because they're equity courts. They're not courts of law. Only a court of justice can fine, and only a court of justice can put someone into jail. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and the cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits of common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Now, you know, prior to 1938, the Rules Enabling Act that effective was 1934, and it was executed in 1938 by the United States Supreme Court, and it was the bar who wrote the rules. They claim, of course, that the Supreme Court wrote the rules. I'm sure they had some participation with it. They were bar attorneys. But this was all pre-planned. They had that already. But the bottom line, prior to 1938, the rules of common law governed even equity courts. And therein is why the people have the power to nullify anything that might take place in an equity court, especially when a criminal act is in a situation. If there's a criminal act, then it has to move into a court of justice. And it also moves with the application of whatever law was written to control that individual who is probably working for a government agency or maybe doing something interstate commercial activity, operating under whatever rules, statutes that are written for those particular groups of people. So when it becomes a criminal case, it goes into a court of law. So does all of the requirements. But the people, as far as equity is concerned, as far as statutes is concerned, but the people have the power to nullify those statutes if they don't think it should apply, if they think it's unjust, or whatever the case may be. Many, if not all, these chancery courts claim that they can try people for misdemeanors and thereby fine and or incarcerate them without an indictment, claiming that a misdemeanor is not an infamous crime, whereas an offense is infamous depends on the punishment which may be imposed. It is not the character of the crime, but the nature of the punishment which renders the crime infamous. Therefore, any alleged crime that results in a prison sentence is infamous. Only the people can sentence an individual to prison. Okay, now that's important to realize that our courts are so lost that they put people in jail outside of the law. They make up their own law, and they operate courts that do not have the power to fine or incarcerate. Town courts, city courts, county courts, village courts, and unfortunately, state courts, because they're all operating. They've closed the doors of justice. They don't permit you to come into an actual court of justice. They apply their rules upon you and their equity, then their statutes and regulations upon you. And therefore, they don't have the power. Only the people can put people into jail. Only people can seize money, They can require the penalty to be, whatever the money they think should be to restore the individual that's in the court that has been violated. But governments cannot put people in jail under common law, which is also called natural law. I think we should use natural law because they have this argument with common law, and it's difficult to get past these people in the courts that are so blind But when you use the word natural law and you refer to the Declaration of Independence, particularly where it says that we're under the laws of nature and of nature's God, they can't argue that point. They can't turn and say that their common law is trial court decisions, because that's what they think common law is. And common law and trial court decisions are so terrible, and they're all over the place. You know, you can go to court and fight a case, and I can come up with five cases that would build, you know, that would, you know, hold up to my side of the case, and they can come up with five or six cases of the same thing. We can go back and forth all day long. But there's a common law maxim. A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing, and that nullifies that whole thing altogether anyway. But nevertheless, that's not what common law is. Common law is natural law. Natural law is that which comes from the heart. God wrote, written his laws into our hearts. And the rules of common law is simply this. It's just maxims at law, things that are that cannot be argued or denied. Ultimately, it's called common sense. That's what the rules of common law is. And they claim that the rules of common law was not fair. But their law, made by men, they claim to be fair. But anyway, our whole court system is turned upside down. Okay, maybe next week we'll look at more courts of records and courts not of record. But right now, Terry, are you able to speak now? Get your mic going? Looks like your mic is open, but I'm not hearing you. All right, well, if you can get that going, let me know, and we'll see if we have any questions that we can take. Meanwhile, we do have people in the queue. So let's see. We have a couple people. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? It's just star 601 if you're on a phone. And there should be a button there if you're on an Apple browser. First caller is anonymous. What's your first name and your state?
Yes. Hi, good evening. This is Elizabeth. I'm in Arizona.
Yep.
Thank you for this opportunity. I've been really working on this for about 2 months, and it's just, you know, I'm getting traction, but I can't fool myself to think I can just whisk through this, but because I'm old enough to know what it's like to have experience in another area of life, and I'm like, oh right, I'm really going to go in and do this, you know, but I'm not there yet. So so what I wanted to ask was on the subject of affidavits, because they're coming up now in my face. I mentioned it, I think, last week a little bit, but I had some emails that were evidence, and I have them backed up in one place, but I had them migrated over to this company, and some of them are gone. You know, the send files are empty. And so, and they're not, they sent me an email. I did let them know. I sent a copy to the CEO, and I'm a little nervous about them, probably for obsessive reasons. So I've just got to check that out and make sure I'm not just tripping on it. But I'm not sure it's an American company. This is part of me standing up and not being afraid of, you know, the landscape. But the woman who wrote the email didn't give her last name. And it didn't even put the name of the CEO, just the office of the CEO, you know, like he's a king or something. So I'm going to write them an affidavit instead of responding to the email. I believe I should do that. So we were talking about getting them notarized, you know, a sworn statement, and then perhaps I should take it to the county clerk and get it put on the record. I know in California, I used to live there, you couldn't put anything on the record unless it was real estate. And they took that away. They took away our public record. You know, that was a long time ago. But is that something that you do, or is a notary sufficient?
What you want to put onto the record in the county is what, affidavits?
Yeah, just to have them on the record in the county.
Well, it's not necessary. You can bring them straight in. Courts. You know, I think you mentioned something about that you had emails and And they wouldn't avail, a lot of emails that you had that you were saving somehow got lost and are not available, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, and I've known this, you know, it was just, to me, it was common sense. I don't like this idea of the cloud. I don't like this idea.
Oh, yeah. No, I have some backup. It's just the, you know, I had put them there to keep them. They said, oh, no, they'll be safe here.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't had the ability to go through all of them yet. But, yeah, it's hard for me to justify why I haven't done the backups the way I should. But
well, here's the thing.
It's painful. I've just seen a lot of pain just even looking at this stuff. And I can see why people want to hire somebody to do it for them. You know, it's,
I do understand what you're saying. But two things, you know, on this. You hire someone else to do it, then you're trusting in them to know everything you should know and,
yeah,
and meanings or what was going on. There's a lot of things in your mind. These are your emails. These, you were you know, dealing with them, responding to them. And and by going through these things, two things I found, whenever I have to deal with a case, especially a case that depresses me because I just don't feel like doing it, I don't have the time, I got other things to do, but it's got to be done, and so I do it. And but what I do, and you know, particularly personal cases, and what I do find is that by going through these things, bringing things into order, finding and bringing these things to become verified, which in other words, they're sworn to, they all have to be in affidavit form, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But all of these things does two things. Number one, as you're going through all this evidence and bringing it together, you start to see, because you know your case is strong, you may be a little leery on how strong it is, and you may be unsure, and you know, and you kind of, you know, there's a lot that you kind of forgot or don't think about. But once you start going through all these things, you start to discover how strong your case really is. And then you start to be able to put these things together as time goes on, as you're working through this, you put it together in a nice way that really becomes digestible to the individual that you want to, you know, bring it before, the jury.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
So, a couple of things. One other thing, you know, as far as emails are concerned, I strongly suggest to people that you go get yourself an email program that is on your computer, okay?
Yeah.
And have.
Well, I have Thunderbird. I've got Thunderbird on.
Great. Thunderbird is great because you got everything in there, and so you don't, you know, whatever you've used, if you used some program where they give you an app, and a lot of people do use like Gmail. And it's not on their computer, it's up there in the cloud somewhere.
Right, yeah.
You can't trust it. You just can't trust it. You know, when you have something like Thunderbird or Pegasus, and like I use Pegasus, which is sort of a sister program to Thunderbird. And it was both written by the same group of people, and it's a free source, you know, email client. And I have, I'll take a guess, maybe 10 or 12 different emails coming with different, you know, different, for instance, I'd have at nationallibertyalliance.org, then I'd have my one of my corporations, Xylem Corporation, then I have the Bible Only, and numerous other emails. So under those three particularly, I have numerous emails coming through. I don't use Gmail or any of those clients at all. And but anyway, my point is that when you set up pop emails, you set them up in your client so that when you open your client up, in your case Thunderbird, all of the emails just automatically come down and is erased off of the internet platform, whatever the name of the program you use in Gmail or whatever, and is now imprinted onto your computer. And then you can save and delete whatever you want, and you know what you got, okay? And, of course, as time goes on, you can, you know, kind of reset different ways of dealing with certain mail. And, you know, and so it's a lot easier to control, but you know you always have it. So you don't seem to have that problem particularly. But when it comes to email, okay, you go through these emails and you start pulling together the emails that you think are important, that have a role that will really make a position or hold a position that you're trying to make, and you want to use this as evidence. Well, you have to verify that. And verifying that is as simple as really swearing to it. For instance, let's say you have a case and you're building a case and you're going out and taking pictures, videos, or just regular pictures at a particular place for some kind of evidence, and you're taking the pictures. Well, maybe an accident or something that took place. Well, bringing those pictures into court and trying to use that evidence doesn't stand on its own. It'll be thrown out. And what you have to do is take all of these pictures. You have to give them a name, a date, a time. You know, give it some background, okay? Give it some basic information on what the picture is supposed to portray, what you're looking at. And this is all put together in an affidavit, and you swear that you're the person who actually took the pictures on this date at this time, and as defined for each one of these pictures all the way through the list, and then you finish it off in an affidavit form because you sign it and have it notarized, and now it becomes evidence in the court. Same thing with the email. You have to do it the same way, so you pull all your evidence together. Now, I'm going to tell you, anybody who's going to go in and make a case in the court, particularly talking to a jury, then you definitely want to learn PowerPoint. Okay, PowerPoint is an extremely powerful, program. I think we give some information in our course. I know we give information in our course on different things where you can go and learn how to use Microsoft Word, for instance. We might have done something with that with PowerPoint.
Yeah.
But you can go out to YouTube and put, how to use PowerPoint, and you'll get a lot of people that give you all kinds of information, how to use PowerPoint, and then you start to learn all the tricks in PowerPoint. And that's a very powerful tool, because when you go before a jury, if you use PowerPoint, especially when you're talking about things that, for instance, your emails bringing up certain points, or if you had pictures and you're bringing up certain points and you can put them up onto your PowerPoint. Maybe you're talking about the common law or something and bringing up some principles or some ideas, whatever the case may be.
Right.
You build your case out onto the PowerPoint so that you can portray it to the people. So they're hearing it and they're seeing it at the same time, and it's sinking into their brains. Okay. Now, you can get up there and just talk and pass a piece of paper along and put this evidence and talk about this and talk about that and talk about the other thing, but it's not as powerful as a PowerPoint might be. So I really strongly suggest people who are going to plan on going in to a court and articulate their case before a jury, think about, and you may not use the PowerPoint for everything, but for especially difficult things, things that people don't understand. If you're going to talk about the law, for instance, the difference between, let me give you an example. Let's say when I write a case and I'm planning on a jury, and I always plan on a jury, but if I'm writing a case and I'm planning on a jury, I'm going to add into that case a copy of the handbook for the jury, okay, for the trial jury, the petit jury, so common law petit jury handbook. But I would not use the written case, the published books for that. I'd use a PDF. Because the PDF, these lawyers, they're so lazy, they won't even read through all that stuff. And you hope that they can read through it. If you've got a lot of memorandums and you got, which is backing up details on a particular statement you might make, and you want to make sure that people understand the meaning of that paper, the meaning of a particular law, whatever the case may be, and you have a memorandum. And so the memorandum is attached to it. And so, you write your papers, you give the bottom line on the point, and then your proof is in the memorandum, and you attach the memorandum, and you do that attachment through a footnote, and then you attach the memorandum in the back. So that's an extremely important thing to do, okay? But you can also place the jury, the trial jury. Maybe you can create it into a memorandum concerning a trial jury, and place that into the paperwork. Again, they're probably not going to read that, okay?
Yeah.
At least not in the beginning, because these people are lazy. And if they don't read it in the beginning and it gets past them, they can't prevent it or deny it in the courtroom. Later on, they'll realize their mistake, okay? Yeah. Because they really don't, they're not interested. Look, at these people, unfortunately, it's my strong opinion, they're really more interested in the money. That's all it is. Lawyers make big dollars, and that's what they're there for. And it really it destroys them, because that's really their big focus. And they're just trying to make money. They don't care if they win or lose. They're going to make money either way. These are the things that's important to do. So I would put something like that, the jury in there, because what's going to happen is you're going to get a stacked jury. And you can free that stack jury if you have the handbook, which is in PDF form for the Pettit jury, attached to your to your case. You can then put that onto a PowerPoint, and you can now liberate that jury to the truth. Okay. Now, there are going to be all kinds of objections, there are going to be arguments, complaints, you know, they're probably going to want to talk with the judge. You know, if they miss that, they know it's a problem now, okay? They know it's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you may have a problem with the judge that might not allow that now, but that can't, in that you have to appeal, and you want to appeal that immediately as you're going through the case. You know, you can appeal decisions of a judge as you're going through a case. You don't have to wait till the end of the case to do that. You can appeal that immediately. And because you need to get these things into your case, this is the power that the people have, and so you want to build a case that really is under natural law. You want to explain what natural law is to these people, and you want to liberate them from the stacking that they had been put into, because you know, these people were chosen particularly because of their state of mind, and they're placed in certain cases. This happens all the time. Anybody wants to really understand that. We have a copy of this. Just go up and read the federal rules. Not the federal rules, what's called the federal questionnaire. Okay? Every state has questionnaires also. I mean, it may even be different court to court. I don't even know. But on the federal level, it's one questionnaire that they all use. And if you read through that, you'll see that they're stacking the jury. They're trying to understand who these people are, and they put them into the cases where they believe that they will get the right decision at the end of the day. For instance, they might ask the question, not that they might ask the question, they do ask the question, you know, where do you get your news from? CNN, ABC, CBS, Fox, I mean, where do you get your, they want to know that, okay? And when you give that answer, you're giving them a lot of information at that point. If you're a CNN listener, and that's where you get most of your news from, they know what your state of mind is, because that whole thing is all controlled anyway. You know, and so they know exactly what your state of mind is. They may not may they do ask a question: Do you have a weapon in your home? Do you have a carrying permit? Does anybody else in your home have a weapon or a carrying permit?
Isn't that a violation of privacy to ask those kind of questions?
It's a violation of the whole system. It's not just. It's none of their business. Those questions are asked for the sole purpose.
Well, that's what I would tell them, and they'd probably kick me out or tell me to go. But I would tell them that,
yeah. They don't allow you to say that in the courtroom. And telling them before you get to the courtroom doesn't mean anything. I'm going to say, you shut your mouth and don't say anything, because if you do, I'm going to find you in contempt. So be quiet. We're not talking about that no more. I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens.
Then they'll put me in jail for 2 weeks, right?
that happens.
It does happen, yeah, I know. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. That's a good point that you made. Absolutely, put you in jail. But anyway, the point is, any evidence you have has to be certified, has to be verified. It has to be. If someone else took the pictures, you got to get them to verify those.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
And some of them are in inspection reports that are done by, you know, it's like part of a whole report that's done officially, so, yeah. I was just trying to find out about, you know, putting it on the record. I don't know why. It seems that I've just got this thing about wanting to put things on the record, because they took it away from us. I mean, I should be able to go down and put anything on the record I want.
You're gathering it together to put onto the record in your court case already. I mean, if you really want to go down and do that, I don't see it as being necessary.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Any,
I just thought maybe it would be something. Yeah. I was listening to something you said on one of the classes about, you know, how the judge doesn't want things on the record. You know, they don't want this stuff to be put on the record. I'm thinking, right, you don't.
Well,
because you're guilty.
As you start to understand a lot of their games, you know, you start to figure some strategies to work around them, and you try to get ahead of them. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Kind of difficult to do without experience, but you know, look at the School of Hard Knocks is the best place to learn, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And losses are wins in the long run, because it'll teach you what your problem is and where you went wrong, and you won't make that mistake in the next case. And so that is the way of law. Law is constructive. And, you know, a couple of things they'll do is they'll try to deny certain evidence. And they'll get rid of all your good evidence, okay? And they do this in the background. It's done before the court, before your case actually goes before arguments, before the jury. They'll do all this stuff beforehand. For instance, you put in all your evidence, and then the judge says, "Well, we're not going to agree. You can't use this evidence, and we don't like this evidence either. We're not going to use that either." Before you know, you don't have any evidence at all, and it's unbelievable the things that they will deny.
Well, that's contempt of court, isn't it? I mean, that's
subversion ultimately. Problem what they do with their rules. They think that they can. That's what the rules of civil procedure is about. That's what the rules of criminal procedure is about. Is they put all this stuff into those rules. They can do anything. As a matter of fact, and this only happened to me once. It was a recent case, maybe about a year ago, and in a federal court, and I used a writ of error. Okay, what a year ago, and I used a writ of error. And this judge came back and said, "You can't use a writ of error in this court." And he gave me some rule. I don't remember what the rule is. I mean, you can look for it in the rules and find it. And this is a federal court. That's already been done away with. All of the writs, writ of habeas corpus, writ of all of these writs that you might use, a writ of error, a writ of quo warranto. This is the power and the authority of the people. These writs are for the purpose of the people to use. Okay? Mm-hmm. They wrote it into their rules that they've discarded them. You can't use them anymore. And of course, that's against the law. That destroys a case. And they don't want the rules of common law. But in the beginning, when I start my case, I do usually make the point now that that I accept any... When I see a rule comes up, and they're using a particular rule, I will accept that rule as long as it's in harmony with the natural law. And I make that point. I only accept rules that are in harmony with the natural law. Now, I usually do that in the footnotes, so it is communicated to them that that's my position and my thinking. Not that they read my papers. Excuse me. Usually they don't read my papers or anybody's papers. They just read the lawyer's papers, and then they write their case on that. I don't know how many writs of error I did on a judge one time, maybe three of them. And he went to the point where he was talking about, giving you had mentioned it before, a contempt charge.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And because every time that judge came up with a decision, it was built upon the lie. And the lies come from this lawyer who turns everything around and makes everything a lie. And they act as if that's truth. And then the judge will write his papers to throw evidence out, throw you out of the court, or whatever the case may be, okay, using those lies. And I will do a writ of error and make the point that I have an affidavit in there. An affidavit rules the court. And it's the affidavit of truth. And they haven't rebutted it, so therefore in this court it stands as truth. And I've already made points A, B, C, D, E, whatever it is. And you now have taken all of these positions from the other side, which is not a sworn statement, no affidavits at all, and they're all in opposition to what I put forth, but yet they didn't rebut it. They don't like that, but that's what they do. Okay, this is a big, big problem. We have to fix our courts. You know, if we don't have courts, we don't have anything. You don't have liberty, you have nothing.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to you.
That's the way it is here, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
But I'm just hoping that it's going to, I think, I'm just thinking realistically that, you know, based on, you know, I look, my mind tells me one thing, right? And as Humphrey Bogart would say, and my whole life tells me another. And, you know, it's like, my experience is that I'm not going to be able to whip this up in 6 months. It's probably going to take me a year and a half to a year before I'm really able to absorb enough and then get organized enough, because I'm not trying to look for sympathy, but it's been very excruciating. I've had a lot of anguish, and it's hard for me to even look at these files. But I did have, thank God, a friend early on who was, she was a retired paralegal, but she told me to write down these causes of action, and I've got a whole bunch of them.
Everything,
you know,
yep.
You know, that was a blessing, you know. So I didn't even know what they were. They were just write down what happened to you, write down what they did, you know. And so, but you know, it's going to take a little while because, and I don't even want to think about having to walk into one of these lion's dens. I will if that's what God wants me to do, but I don't think I'm going to make it.
Remind me again the subject matter of your case. I forget.
I beg your pardon?
What's the subject of your case, the subject matter?
Oh, I'm in real estate sales fraud.
Okay.
And I could just get started. It'd take me 2 hours to tell you everything. It's crazy. Yeah.
Did you keep a log?
Beg pardon?
Did you keep a log? Hello, Julie.
I have several books that I've written in, and some of it's very scattered.
What I've learned, I learned in construction, you know, I was very astute in contract law because I was a contractor and I've been stuck in the courts a few times and didn't want to get a lawyer to go in and, you know, and try to defend yourself and if you don't know the contract law, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I as a contractor, I kept a log, and I put everything and anything into that log. The littlest thing, it doesn't matter, because that is evidence in any court of law. All you have to do is certify it by verifying the fact that this is my name, blah, 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 blah. I kept this log starting on this particular job, whatever the job name was, and on this particular date the job started and ended on this date. And so on and so forth. So everything in there now is evidence, okay?
Okay.
And you have to verify. If any evidence coming into the court that is not verified, sworn to, documented some way, it's not stand in court, and they're going to throw it.
Well, I can do that. I've got some journals that I have things in. Like just finding out who everyone was, what their license numbers were. You know, and that kind of thing. And I do have writing in there. I've even got recordings on audio. I was just talking to myself. I mean, it's been real insane. And then you find out that the lawyers, you can't help you, you know, and the law enforcement. I mean, I've talked to a few guys over some other few things, but I'm not trying to treat them with suspicion. I just have an instinctual concern about who's on what side of this mess. And so I'm...
no one knows your case better than you do, remember. And I'm telling you, the more time you spend with your case, the more time you spend putting your evidence together, putting it in some kind of an order, putting it into, you know, certain parts of your case, you know, again, into PowerPoints. And then, you know, by the time you go back to your case, you review all those things that you just, oh, I forgot this, I should have added that, oh, what about this, I should have made this point. And you keep, you know, building up. Oh, I could have said this whole paragraph in three sentences instead of eight sentences. I could have used this phrase, which sounds better and is more accurate than that phrase or that word. Or, you know, you keep, you know, just massaging your case over and over. I don't think there's a case ever that I've been involved with that I haven't gone through 15 times, 10 times, 12 times, just over and over and over again. Because when you come to the court, you have to really be able to articulate this. And you should have all your notes and everything you need, everything in organized positioning, you know, your paperwork and everything, so that you can get access to it very quickly. Also, I suggest very strongly for anyone going into the courts that you get this particular book. This is an extreme, and it only costs $10. So if you go to under Welcome, come down to Books by John Darash.
Uh-huh.
And one of the books that you want to hold when you go into the court is a common law court handbook. This book here is an extremely powerful book. I put it together for myself for when I go into courts to have all these things at the, you know, at my hand, to be able to pull out a particular piece of information, a Supreme Court decision maybe, or a code might be I can use there in court, because there's a lot of codes you can use in that court against them or to control them. You know, I'm talking about the court itself. But there's a lot of good stuff. This is a really, really, $10.99 is what we charge for.
Yeah, I think I do have it already purchased. I'm just waiting for it. Yeah, I have the common law handbook, and it's got the Constitution and everything.
That,
and
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I, and again, look at, when it comes to law, I always define the law. Right now, I define the law as the laws of nature and the nature's God, the Declaration of Independence. That is the foundation of American law, period. And it's backed up in the Constitution. I think it's in Article 6, where it calls the law, that refers to the law of land. And it's defined a little earlier with equity and law. And law, L-A-W, is you go into Black's Law and you go into Bouvier's Law, two great dictionaries to go into. Black's Law is the best. And you get them in our course, by the way. You know, you can download them.
Yeah, I have them. I downloaded them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very powerful. And also my footnotes. Did you download the footnotes?
I'm just getting to that part. You know,
yeah, when you get there, download the footnotes. I mean, look, I've been putting things into footnotes for years, okay? All of my, any time I would write a, write something and put a footnote on it, I'd give it a title and put it into, just a notepad and give it a title and throw it into a folder called footnotes. And so I shared my footnotes that I had up until that point when I did this particular course. And again, extremely powerful, powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff working on and digging up and finding for years, you know.
Well, I went to the affidavit part. I forget which part that's in. It's in the pleadings. I can't remember, but I've got it all. You know, I realized that the information there, you were referring to something before that. So, you know, I'm just getting started on the essentials, and that's like, that's really a lot of, you know, information, and I'm just soaking it up as much as I can, but I really got to get this, you know, and it isn't like I'm competing or anything. I'm sincere. I can't do this. Like, see, I'm a photographer, like 40 years, and I mean, I know my share of this stuff, and so it gives me the perspective how much somebody who's done the law for 40 years, I mean, my God, you know, I'm like somebody who walks up with a lens and a camera and goes, how does this work? You know, I mean, that's how I, you know, I'm a newbie, a neophyte in this. And, but not, you know, I have my life's experience, you know, to help me to understand, you know, context. Yeah.
Experience is the most powerful thing you can have. I mean, you can get all the book learning you want. You can go to school as long as you want, but you still got to get out there and get experience, because experience is really the key, applying what you learned by reading and studying and bringing things together. But again, you want to document everything. You want, and look, every individual, you know, our liberty, okay, well, let me take our heritage is in the law, okay? And our inheritance is liberty. If you don't know the law, you don't really know what your heritage is, nor do you know what your liberty is. That's why the United States, we're in such a big dilemma right now, because a lot of these kids and college students and even people 30, 40, even older than that, okay, they have no clue on the Constitution. They have no clue on civics. They have no clue on who we are as a people. You know, they're told that we're a democracy. We are not a democracy. We're a republic. And they say, oh, well, we're a democratic republic. Well, that's an oxymoron. It's a contradictive. It's oil and water. It doesn't work. It doesn't fit. No natural law republic. No, and our founding fathers were clear on this. No natural law republic can survive parties. They will be destroyed. Washington spoke about this in a well-addressed. And so, but people, this is what people believe. People think that we can't have a religion in the classroom. Well, look, we're not to hold up any particular group. You can't, Catholics, Presbyterians, Episcopalians. You're not supposed to do the denominations. But up until 1963, the Bible was the key book in the school. And it was used constantly, learning to read, history, everything, morals, and so on. And that's why, you know, generally speaking, we were a reasonably moral nation. We understood we're one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We understood that we are a Christian nation. We understood that natural law ultimately brings us right to the Bible. You can't take the part. It's part of who we are. The founding fathers all agreed that it was important to have that Bible in the school. They didn't require it by law, But they put it out there that it should be there as, you know, basically the principle of study. And they took it out in 1963, you know, part of the conspiracy to destroy us. So you get all these people, they get upset, you know, you can't have religion in school, you can't have this. I just heard today, and I didn't know this, out in Texas, and I think it was around Dallas or in Dallas or somewhere around there anyway, I'm pretty sure it was Texas anyway, that there was Sharia law courts actually in process. It would combined together, these courts had 3,000 cases going under Sharia law in the United States of America. That is subversion against who we are, against the Constitution. It's subversion. We have principles. And if people want to come to this country and they like the idea of liberty and, you know, just don't mess with our law because this is who we are. And
That's kind of good why it's not good, but this New York election, the New York mayor election, is starting to bring focus on the Muslim thing because, you know, we've been focusing on other problems of, you know, illegal stuff. And, you know, they can be here, but they can practice whatever. But, you know, when their religion becomes a crime, we can't do that here. They treat women and all that, you know, it's not good.
You can believe and you can think anything you want, but what you cannot do is you cannot take a position of honor and bring that into that position of honor and change who we are as a people. That's what that guy down in New York City is doing. Okay, he's changing everything. And these people, you know, out in Texas with the Sharia law, they're changing everything of who we are. That is subversion against the United States of America. That I can't believe that this administration doesn't understand that to the point that we are guaranteed a Republican form of government. And these people with some authority have taken an oath to uphold that Constitution and give us a Republican form of government, not a Sharia form of government, not a civil law form of government, but a Republican form of government, and in our case, a natural law Republican form of government. And that principle comes right up out of the Declaration of Independence, the first founding document, which is the foundation of our law, that we're under the laws of nature and of nature's God. And there's no other book on the planet that brings you to the laws of nature and of nature's God other than the Bible. There is nothing else out there. Okay? Yeah. So...
they've got to have their eyes on it. They're probably, you know, it seems like, you know, the thing about with President Trump, you know, he comes out with this art of war and all that. It's like when you want the enemy to think you're far away, that's when you're close. And when you want your enemy to think you're close, you're actually far away. You know, I mean, they've got to be watching it, and, you know, they've got so many things going on, but that's going to happen. There's been some more attention to it. It just came out the other day. There's like 8 states that have this problem.
Yeah, that was his art of the deal, and his art of the deal kind of aligns, I understand. I haven't read the book, so I don't know if particular, but I heard that it kind of aligns with the art of law, and the key thing is to keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. And that's why when he is out there with individuals and he's palling around with them and say, you know, I'm a friend, you're a friend of mine, he calls them friend. And they may be, look at China, you know, Xi, okay? One time in a meeting recently, 3 times he said, he's a friend of mine, I go back a long time, he's a good guy, he's nice. But sometimes he's got these weird ideas, you know, I'm paraphrasing what he said. Thing is he calls them friends to begin with. You know, you can't go in and change China. That's up to Chinese people to change China. We have to worry about America. But nevertheless, because he calls him a friend, or he has a close relationship with him, or is close with maybe the guy from Israel, what's his name, Bibi. You know, a lot of people have a lot to say about that. They're not understanding the strategy of Trump. You know, again, he may look real close. Well, that's because he's keeping his enemies closer. You know, those individuals particularly are problematic, at least as far as I understand. I don't have the inside stuff, but I try to figure out what's really going on. And my opinion,
I see inconsistencies, you know, contradictions and stuff. But yeah, right now I'm just trying to figure out, like, I just see a lot of stuff. I'm taking a lot of time on this of this evening, and I appreciate you talking with me. And
well, we only really have one other person queue right now, so I don't mind.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Wants to get into the queue, star 601, and an app or a browser should be a button that enter the queue. But we can spend a few moments.
You know, like there's a lot of things that I was thinking, God, you know, like this thing with this, my emails are gone, and they're not addressing me with any kind of respect. They're hiding behind names and no last names. And so I'm going to see what I can come up with an affidavit and send it to them. But I need to practice, and I also need to send some to inspectors who did not file reports, and you know, and they should respond, you know, because that's going to be evidence. And I'm just trying to think of like things that I could do that I need to get my chops on, and this is a new thing for me, are the affidavits.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think they're brilliant. I mean, it's a great thing to be able to claim the truth, you know, somehow. As people say, well, you know, your testimony. Well, testimony means something. Did you get it on video? No. Well, you know, it's like, video's not that old. We don't need a video. Yeah. So, but it's so good. I am working on it, and I'm just doing the best I can to, like last night, I was, you know, I'm reading, and it's like I have to take a break, and it's like, okay, take a break, you know, and then come back, and it's feeding my soul. I don't know if that sounds, but it is. It's helping me because I don't know what's going to happen, you know, how soon this will happen, but it doesn't matter, you know, as long as I'm in it, and I'm gonna, and you know, I agree. I need to pull out all that stuff I have. I mean, I've got about 8 to 10 people that are part of this.
Well,
the
more time you spend on this, and the more time you spend on your evidence and bringing it together, you know, and putting it in some kind of a form that you're going to lay it out in the court, you know, you start to have a lot more confidence in your case, and you start to feel better about your case. And again, you know, I'm always depressed when I have to deal with the case. But by the time I get into it, I start to get a real positive attitude because I'm going to kick butt in this.
Oh, okay.
And I get this and I get that, you know, because I'm not going to court unless I'm going to win. I always lose most of the time anyway because they throw you out. They don't have courts of law. They got all these stupid rules to get rid of you and to prevent evidence coming in and all this. Just goes on and it's so sick. Look, as long as the people are ignorant to this law, you know, remember, you know, our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. And people need to understand that. And you can only know and understand that and feel strong about it if you know the law. And again, the law is common sense, okay? The only thing that you have to learn, ultimately, is you have to learn due process. And due process, once you start to learn due process, it's so logical and so common. It's just common sense. Every point of this due process going through how things work, it's very simple and you can retain it very easily and very quickly because it's common sense. It makes sense. Okay? You know, when you're going to make a motion in the court, you have to send someone a notice of motion. And you have to put in big words. You have to, you know, put notice of motion on one paper that gives the basic information about this notice of motion, and then the motion is attached to that. And it makes common sense to alert the other side. Something is happening, okay? And you got to pay attention to this paper. You know, it's just like filing a summons, okay? You have to have a summons on top of your paperwork, and we lay out how to put all that paperwork together, you know, and in the course. And you have a notice, which ultimately is a summons. And you want to get, you know, certify that through the mail, get certified a slip on that has been mailed, so that you can't say they didn't get it. And it's got to be the summons itself you want to do by sheriff. I don't do anything anymore. I don't do summonses anymore outside of the sheriff because they play games, no matter how well you do your serving. They play games and said, ah, you wouldn't serve right, throw them out. And then you got to, they won't even let you come back in on the same case to redo it. Then you got to come back with another $310 or $410 on the federal level just to come back to the court again. And it's just sickening what these people do. But I'll tell you, look, we need every child in America should learn who we are as a people, what the true history of the United States is and our founding fathers and who they were and who they are and what they've said about, you know, bringing us together, the Federalist Papers, the debates, the arguments, and so on. All this stuff is so extremely important. And to be able to understand and know due process in a court and understand that, all this should be taught in school. By the time someone comes out of high school, you know, the 12th grade, they should know. They should be able to walk into a court of law and take care of their own business. They should be able to file papers and know exactly how to file papers. Everybody in America should know that because that's who we are. We're a people of law. And due process is the only thing that's really, you know, who was it? Lincoln, I believe it was, that said, give me the facts. I don't need anything but the facts. I will win the case on the facts. That's the fact. Okay? That's how you win. Cases on the facts. So, you know, the statutes, the regulate has nothing to do with anything. We should know certain facts, certain statutes that we can apply in the court against the judge or any other individual that works for the government. We can apply them against them, but we don't apply against us. So we should know certain ones, and that's what that handbook is all about. It gives a lot of information on that kind of thinking. But we should know how to deal with this and how to go into a court, how to win a case. We should know how to use a PowerPoint and how to use Microsoft Word strongly. And everybody should know this. And that's why we're falling apart, because people don't even know who we are. People have no clue. They think that separation of religion means you can't talk about God. That's insane. You know, if the king of our court is Jesus Christ, how can you not talk about him? That's why the Bible was the centerpiece of our education, and our founding fathers made it so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the king of our court is not a man, it's God. The laws of nature's God. And the king's bench is the jury. That's what the king's bench is. It's the jury. So the jury is to uphold the laws of God, the laws of nature and of nature's God. And again, those laws are written in your heart, okay?
Yeah.
And you can express them through, you know, ultimately through common sense. So that mixed with the facts and understanding due process, which is very simple. It's not. This is no big thing. You know, one evening maybe I'll just lay out the basics of due process so people can see how simple it really is. This is not complex at all, okay? And that's the only you have to have memory too, but in memory, anything that is really simple, common sense, it's easy to remember to begin with, and you just need to spend time and understand it, and you won't forget it. It's that simple, you know?
Yeah, I just have to get a little stronger. My reading needs to be, you know, it's like running or biking or anything, you know, it takes endurance, and then after a while, it's just, you know, it's easier.
Well, it's, look, you know, reading... Yeah. As far as learning to write, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Read cases we have right in the front page here. Redress of grievances to open natural law courts. Read that because it's a law case, okay?
Oh, yeah, I saw that,
Presentment to the President Trump and A.G. Biden, okay? Presentment to President Trump, an indictment upon the federal judiciary. Presentment to the United States Supreme Court, addendum to the grand jury presentment. These are powerful, powerful papers. And it basically, there's a lot to be learned in them. So right here on the front page, you know, these are papers you should just read to see how things are put together. And you might pull a lot of things. Let me cut and paste this. Let me cut and paste that because it's good stuff that you're going to use here or there. But most of this I find in my footnotes anyway, that in my memory. Now, the other thing is the federal court cases. You know, we have an action against YouTube. You can go read that. We're action against... Wow. Sure, you go read that, okay? We have the grand jury docket. We have the Finnegan murder indictment. We have the grand jury docket, which has huge amounts of papers in here that you can read through. Again, by reading these papers is how you learn to write. Okay, just read them. As you're studying law, anybody that wants to understand how to walk into a court and take care of business, number one, you go to Education Starts Here and take our course, okay? Our course right here is Court Access in the Common Law. Click on that. Yeah. Look at the introduction to this course. You get the first 3 hours to listen to see kind of how it goes, how it flows. Okay, gives you a list of what we cover here in that course. Okay, so it's a 90-hour course. Between that and reading these cases, you can become really good at this stuff. Because I learned to write by reading other cases, okay? That's how I learned to write. How they write, I write like they write to some degree, okay? You know, they are taught to write in a certain fashion, and I've learned that from them by reading Supreme Court rulings particularly, you know, Marbury versus Madison. United States versus Williams. Okay, those are powerful cases that you should read. You can find, and by the way, look at these are all papers that were written and filed in the courts, and we have memorandums that were filed in the courts. We have moved for cause we filed in the court, habeas corpuses. We did a thing against the SAFE Act here in New York. This is a case of papers and everything we put together on that. We did cases for denial of habeas corpus and felony rescue, and also denial of due process and felony rescue. All these things, concealment and felony rescue indictment, the murder of Lavoy Finnegan, that's a powerful case right here, this particular murder. And then a bunch of memorandums we have here and writs of information and so reading through these things from time to time is going to give you the ability to learn to write and how to talk in the courts, okay? And just by reading, it's going to come to you. It's just common sense as far as due process. And ultimately, really, you know, the way you write is really common sense, too. You use the wherefore clause, you use that word, whereas comes up often a lot, whereas this, whereas that, whereas the other thing. And you'll see, it'll all flow. But while you're studying the course and going through it, you should be reading papers here and there because you have to learn to write. That's the hardest part. But if you read a lot, you're going to find it comes pretty good and pretty easy.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing it.
Not rocket science. It really isn't. It's simple. And you don't have to memorize law because law is common sense.
I think the biggest thing I come up against is my own idolatry that I'm trying to recover from because God is my only God. But this world demands that I worship whoever, whatever, you know, a badge, a white coat, you know, whatever it is. I'm supposed to put myself submit to them and that there's consequences if I don't. So it's like a childlike view and I just need to grow up a little bit more because I'm really not afraid of them as much as I mean, it's just when I think about it, because I've seen myself talk to people that I've been, you know, I'm afraid of being intimidated by. I mean, in my work that I did, I had to be, I had to take leader responsibilities. And it wasn't about being somebody important. It was about taking responsibility and making sure everything got done and, you know, and knowing what I was doing. And so if I can just appreciate that part of me and bring it over into this and be patient with myself, you know,
most people, majority of the people are lost in a lost world. This world is lost. I mean, you look to see what's going on. It's just totally lost. And people are lost in it, and even if they're not paying attention, they're even lost even deeper. That's why education is so important, that we have to bring common sense, which is law, into our education for the children. And those of us who have already come out of school and we're not in school anymore, well, we need to devote some time to learning these things, and you do it right here at National Liberty Alliance. We've got everything we need to learn. And if we can get the funding someday, which we need a lot of funding for this, We'll start writing books for the school. We'll get books that will teach our children true civics, true American history, who our founding fathers really were, how they brought the Constitution together. We're a Christian nation. We'll lay those things out so clearly, it's undeniable. You know,
yeah.
You can't deny it. And that's what we need, you know?
Yeah, I'm starting to start talking, but nice to talk to you.
Next person, and if you want to get back to the queue again, you can get back.
Yeah,
in.
Sure. I'll be here. I'm listening. I set the time. Thank you. Thanks, John.
Okay. All right. Well, just before we move on to the next caller here, I I've been staying away from these social programs. You know. For instance, I just joined up with X. I was thinking about this because I got to get this message out to more people. We're not getting it out. It's the job of those people who are listening to this program and are involved with this program to try to get other people involved, to try to get the word out, maybe even try to get us interviews. If you know of a good news station, whether it's or a podcaster that you can make contact with and get us in, we'll go and talk about who we are and what we do. My wife has been on X for a while, and she keeps telling me I should go on there. But I try to stay away from these social programs, you know, with people all this. They just talk about a lot of nonsense. And even on X, I see a lot of nonsense there. But I'm not going to focus on the nonsense. I'm trying to get good, serious conversations going there. And so I opened up, an account, I guess you'd call it, on X, okay? Let me just lay this out. If people are on X, maybe you might want to go out and take a look. Maybe you can give us a like. Maybe you can get it out to other people. But I opened up two communities up there. One community is called The Bible Only, and the other community is called Government by Consent. And so people might want to go out and take a look at that. Maybe you'll like what you see and participate on it. But, you know, again, sending other people there is the key. And we'll try to get enough, because we have to get critical mass to really do the job that we need to do here at National Liberty Alliance. You know, we have put everything together that we need to do what we need to do. Even to the point, you know, we've written books, and there's another individual, Brent Allen Winters, who's written numerous books, and he wrote a great book called Excellence of the Common Law. I learned a lot from that book, and him and I agreed that if we can get the funding, we're going to sit down and take our books and write them with different, textbooks for school from K through 12, okay? And so by the time these children go through school, all the way from K through 12, they get a good solid education on who we are, what their duty is as an American citizen in a nation that is under the common law, natural law. I prefer using that statement. I got to get more used to that. But anyway, we need to get this into the schools. That takes money. We also need to go professional here. That takes money. So as soon as we start to get to the critical mass, maybe we'll collect enough money to do those things. But meanwhile, we do have everything here that we can put together at this point. But it's going to take a lot of time changing all of our literature and all of our books into textbooks that we can bring into the schools and sort of bring it down to the level of a first grader. The principles and basics should start off in kindergarten. I mean, the Pledge of Allegiance should start off there. I don't even know if they do the Pledge of Allegiance anymore. The Pledge of Allegiance in itself is an education. So every child, by the time they come out of kindergarten, should know the Pledge of Allegiance. And they should know some basic little things. In the first grade, it's building blocks all the way up. And by the time you get into 6th, 7th, 8th grade, you can start talking about some deep stuff. You can do due process. You can get into civics. I mean, that could even before that, of course, but I mean really deep down into it. Due process as far as learning how to go into a courtroom, learning how to make an argument, learning how to write a paper, learning the process of due process, learning the difference between law and equity. And all these things that we need to know. Because if you don't know the law, how can you know when the people you are electing into position is breaking that law? How can you know that? You need to know. And the only law that is kind of technical, and it's all logical anyway, is really the Constitution itself and the Bill of Rights. And to go through that and understand your liberties and control over our government, government by consent, and how to control that government, is power. And it should be exciting going through that to learn those things, to exercise and execute those powers and authorities that we the people should have. Because right now, we do not have government by the consent of the people. We have government by just a bunch of criminals. That's what we have. And that's going to continue as long as we the people are ignorant to these things. Okay, we're going to take our next caller here, and this is the only other caller we have in the queue, so if anybody else wants to get in the queue, now's the time. *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. Click the button if you're on an app or a browser. We got Walt from New York. How you doing, Walt? You got the mic.
Hi, John. There's so many things you were saying with that lady. I had about 50 comments, and I forgot them all already.
Yeah, that was a good call.
But I want to say something first. First thing that's coming back to my memory. You remember Jack Nicholson said to the judge, "You can't handle the truth." Remember that?
And if right. You said that, to the prosecutor, yep.
All right. Now, where he got that from, whether he knows it or not, is in John chapter 14, verse 17, the spirit of truth, the world can't receive it, John.
There you go.
And also, Jesus said this.
That is a statement. You know, when you're looking at the true truth, the world can't handle the truth. At least most of the world can't handle the truth.
Yes, okay. And now here's something the reason I called you is something about how you operate on your program every week, but I'll get into that in a minute. Let me see if I can just remember what I was going to say. No, I can't right now, but like I said, I got 50 different comments. But I want to ask you this first, and the other stuff will come if you have time.
Yeah.
John, this program you have every week where people can call in and ask questions and listen to your show and everything, I noticed there's people, these church out there in Sandpoint, Idaho, and I get good information from them through the mail and everything, and they put in there, I even talked to them on the phone, the minister,
mm-hmm.
And they said they have something now every Sunday morning live on the computer. You can participate or, listen to it,
mm-hmm.
Maybe
yep.
Even watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do any of that. I don't have it. So I said, well, how about can you do some kind of conference call? That's like what you're doing right here. So what I'm saying is, if they got the church services and everything going on out there Sunday morning for a couple hours, could I just call and listen? And I don't know, how would I tell them to do that, to suggest it to them so they could do it? Is it expensive to do what you're doing?
Well, what I'm doing here is probably more better stated as an open forum, where people come in with questions or comments or even corrections. And then, of course, I, being the host, respond to that. So that's what I do. If they're looking to do that, too, I mean, they can use the same program we use. It's Start Meeting, okay? There's a free one, but, we got the purchase one. It's pretty cheap.
Who do you contact?
Well, it's startmeeting.com. Just go there and download the program, and you can start using it right away.
What did you say? I didn't quite hear that. What did you say?
Yeah, you go to startmeeting.com, okay, and you download their program. You can read the information on that. You can go out to YouTube and put how to use Start Meeting, and there's people who will tell you about that, and they got the information on it also, of course, at startmeeting.com.
Okay, when you said that word, is it S-T-A-R-T, startmeeting.com?
You got it. One word.
Okay, now, John, I want to get into okay, thank you. I'll tell the minister that.
And just so you know, though, that particular program, you can also get the paid program, which allows you to get more people into the room. I think we can get up to 1,000 people. Not that we have anything to do with that, but you can get up to that. And then you go even beyond that. And so that's just one of this is one of the best programs out there for having something like this.
Okay. Now, I'd like to get in about two or three comments. They're controversial.
Mm-hmm.
About this thing about what Jesus' word said. Most people don't notice. First of all, he's telling true John these things we just talked about. Then he also said in John 17, I don't even pray for the world. Why is it? I'm not going to get into that now, but I'm going to go into something else. You know, I'm going to read what I got from the library, John. Here it is right here. Back in when the settlers came over here, I'm going to pick up here. In May 8th of 1783, when Jonathan Trumbull was elected governor of Connecticut, Reverend Ezra Stiles, who was the president of Yale University, delivered an address. First, he considered Deuteronomy, I think he said 24:19, as introductory to a discourse. Here's what he said, John, upon the welfare of God's America, Israel. And that guy has, I got to turn the page, made America Israel above all the nations which he has made. Now, John, you said earlier that the Constitution is an extension of God's law, Israel's law. These people over here, John, were saying they are the Israelites. And how do you know if you're a true Israelite? I'm going to show you right now. People showed me from 100 years ago, stuff I got information from. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 42. You're going to see, once we get this information, it's going to expose the enemy. Before I describe what it's in there.
That was 1 Samuel what?
All right, 1 Samuel.
Okay, 1 Samuel.
17, verse 42. But before you go there, I want to get into something else.
What verse 42? What chapter?
Yeah, that's the verses right there. You're going to see this, how we can tell.
Yeah, what chapter? What chapter in 1 Samuel?
1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 42.
Okay, 42. Go ahead.
All right, but now I'm going to say something else before I get into that, because this is going to be shocking. You can go into a court today. We have to expose what spirit's in that court. Because we have Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, Supreme Court case 1938, which you talk about, where the United States of America and the Constitution for the United States of America was done away with a phony bankruptcy contract treaty. That's how they did it, the bankers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now you no longer had the Spirit of God in that courtroom. Because before 38, most of the time, I was told, when the bailiff said, all rise, John, the judge come out from the back room holding the Bible up with his right hand as high as he could. People knew what that Spirit, we don't see God, but with the Spirit
was
in.
That all started with the Organic Act of 1871. And,
yep.
And the final nail in the coffin was 34 and 38.
Yes, but after 38, that was pushed aside. And Congress is objecting. But there's no void in the courtroom, John. There's another spirit. Now, how we change what's going on in this de facto court, because it's a de facto government that took over.
Right.
If you go to the dictionaries, law dictionaries, or legal definitions, you even can't even find a definition for the United States of America. They run around the bush. But you can find a definition for the United States, though. Mm-hmm. It's a corporation. Now, John, watch this, what happens when I tell you the next few things. That is shocking me. You can go into the court. First of all, I go to the senior center down here in Jacksonville every day. I'm from New York. I wish I was back up there. We say that the Pledge of Allegiance that you're talking about to the flag of the United States of America, it's the true flag in there. It's old, right? But in every court, they replaced it, John. There's a flag in there with the yellow fringe on it. It's an Admiralty Maritime Corporation flag.
And where is this at?
It's that yellow fringe flag represents no nation on earth,
yeah,
John.
But where is this flag at in a court?
It's in all the courts, every one of them.
Well, you got to bear in mind, on the federal courts, they belong there, but they belong with two flags because they do hear both sides. They deal with the law of the land and the law of the city. I mean, the law of the sea.
Well,
they both belong there, and even with the president, because, you know, he's the commander in chief, and again, he's got to play both roles. But the Court of Justice in a regular courtroom on a state level should always be without the fringes. But I do know that they put the fringe in there because it brings...
Let me just get into this a little bit more, if you're still going to stand with that. I got to tell you a little bit more about this.
Sure,
okay, the next thing is, if you you go into the court, all right, local courts, and you bring, you know those little flags with the sticks that you hold, 4x6-inch flags?
Yep.
Okay, if you go into those courts, I already know what's happening. Because one guy went in there, they tried to charge him, the name on the paper was all capital letters, and he got out of it because it wasn't him. He proved it wasn't him in the court. It's a corporation trying to drag him in the corporation. So you go in this court with these two flags. The old real flag, it's got code. It's the law by code. And that corporation flag, yellow fringe flag, you say it's all right in the federal courts, there's no code upholding it. There was, but then it slowed, the code disappeared, John. There is no law, and here's how you can find this out. But see, if there's the most popular radio station in America is called Coast to Coast. It's at night, every night, 7 days a week from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. In 2012, they had a whole show, 4 hours, about this yellow fringe flag with the top constitutional scholars in America was on there and anybody else was concerned. I'll send you a copy of it. And they concluded, John, that flag represents no nation on earth, no laws, and it can charge you with anything, and you're guilty to proven innocent. So
well,
it's the same thing.
One flag is for the sea, and the other flag is for the land. And you know,
tell you that. Sure, it's the Admiralty flag, that's right.
But it has nothing to do with
you. You see how they use it, but here's the thing. With that flag, you'll see how they run the courts. It's corrupt.
I understand. You know, they
here's what you do, though. You go up, I'm trying to show you, I'm going to go further with this, beyond the flag, about the Israelites, okay? You go in there with two flags in your hand. I say, if I say the pledge to the one with the yellow fringe, I'll tell the judge, right to him, judge, by what authority, what flag is the authority of this court? Say your town courts. They're not going to answer your question, John. So what I'm going to tell them is, I'm going to say, okay, is this the court of the 1938 bankruptcy? Or, that's Erie Railroad versus Tompkins case? Is that what this is? You got a bankruptcy proceeding in here? It's not the real constitutional law. It's not the Constitution for the United States of America as signed by George Washington. It's the Constitution of the United States Corporation. It's subtly different. That's what there is. There's no laws in these courts. That's what they're going by. So, okay, so you got that. So you bring up the two flags. You say, Judge, tell me what flag you're under. He's not going to answer you, John. That's one thing right there. You can corner him up. And here's how we're going to expose the next thing. It's huge. You say, Judge, I want to ask you, you tell me I have a right to this attorney here, standing here, licensed attorney with the Bar Association. The minute I take the licensed attorney, you tell me I just gave up my rights. So I'm going to ask you, Judge, I thought you said I had a constitutional right to take this attorney. As soon as I take the attorney, you took away my rights, and this attorney that's representing me now won't object to you and say, objection, Your Honor, you can't take away his rights. Because as soon as you take a licensed attorney, John, what it is, it doesn't say that in the Constitution you have a right to an attorney. It says you have a right to counsel, which you said earlier tonight. Counsel is S-E-L, not C-I-L. Yeah. It is you have a right to information. And they're not going to tell you what that information you have a right to is because they're trying to hide it since the bankruptcy in 38. And the information you have a right to in that courtroom is, like you said, all night tonight. Under the laws of nature and God, we have a right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and property. But they took it away. They stole it with a false bankruptcy. So if you don't take that licensed attorney, he's going to try to scare you into taking it. But if you don't, you ask the judge, sir, what is this... It actually says I have a right to information, and it's counsel. And what does that information have a right to, Judge, in this courtroom? I'm not going to tell you, sir, John or Will. I'm not going to tell you what this information is. Well, I'm going to declare it with your recorder on, Judge. Here's what we do, John. We expose this evil, what's in there. Back them up. You say, isn't it true I have a right to have God as my counsel in this courtroom? He can't deny it. He won't. So here's the next step, John, in this courtroom. You say, Judge, you got this other procedure going on, a bankruptcy proceeding, and I'm not going to subject myself or my property to it. You have no jurisdiction. And by the way, who runs this court that threw President Trump out of court when he had a right to be in a petition of government about that voting back in 2020? Who's running this corporation, this United States corporation? Who is it? I'm not going to tell you. Here's who it is, John. Just go to any law school. It's really bad when you find out. Go to any law school and look in Wex Dictionary, W-E-X. look up the definition. Here's what it is. Here's who runs all the corporations, including the United States Corporation, not the sovereign government George Washington signed for. Because the United States of America that George Washington signed, which says we the people, it says in that preamble and everything, it was a religious ceremony. We establish this for ourselves and our posterity. There's a little clue right there, John, who these people were. But back to this thing with the Webb's Dictionary, okay? This Webb's Dictionary will say, look up artificial person. What is it? Okay? It is an entity, John, and it was created by law. It doesn't tell you what law created it. And it has limited rights and duties, and it controls corporations. It's alive, John, but then it says, like a human being, but then it says, go see what a natural person is. John, it doesn't have flesh and blood that's running the corporation. It's the spirit that replaced God after the bankruptcy. They can't tell you it's the dark spirits. They call it artificial person. So the next thing you say in the courtroom, John, is, I will do it. Is the artificial person as described in your law schools running this court, sir, your corporation with your yellow French flag? I'm not going to answer your question, sir. Go see an attorney. No, then I'm going to declare it, sir, with your recorder on, what the artificial person is. It's the enemy of Almighty God. Can you deny it, sir? It's right in your Webb's Dictionary. It tells you who it is. It's a live entity with no flesh and blood. And it's opposite. It's the antithesis of constitutional rights. And the Constitution, John, is the appendix of the Bible. It's a continuation of it. So who are the people that came in here? George Washington will tell you. This government, this Constitution for the United States of America, it's for all of us. He asked, do you want to be king? No, we already have one king. So who's the king? It was Jesus. So those people, I just gave you one thing here, example of his name is, I gave it to you a minute ago. I get nervous, John. I forget his name was. He was the president of Yale University, Ezra Stiles. He says, we're the Israelites. Now, how do you prove who an Israelite is? It's right in the Bible, John. I'm going to get back to now. I told you about it. It was in 1 Samuel 17:42. That is one example how you can prove who a true Israelite is. And they're here. They're walking around. And they're the enemy of the serpent seed in Genesis 3:15. They're walking around. People don't think the devil can be in flesh. I'll give you one example. I talked to a minister about it today. He had no answer yet. You remember this, John? When Jesus said to his disciples, I choose you, would he say 12 disciples, and one of you is a devil? That's Judas. And then later he said it would have been better if he was never born.
Right.
Here's the question, John. I'll get into this also back to what we're talking about. Is get off temporarily to go back to Samuel. Okay? Can Jesus, or you, John, even, you're one of the brethren, can you ever tell somebody that Jesus would call the devil, not possessed by the devil, can you tell Judas, go say the Lord's Prayer, our Father who art in heaven? Can't do it, John. Because he is a literal devil. Flesh body. Same thing in Matthew 23.
Because you got
a lot of this. How about one more? The Pharisees, they said to Jesus near the cemetery there, if we were back in our Father's Day, forefather's day, we would not kill these prophets. Jesus says, you hypocrites, vipers, a generation of vipers and serpents, he called them. He says, yes, you are them, the descendants of them. But you also, of their forefathers that killed the prophets, but I tell you, you're guilty, ready for this, John? Nobody's going to believe this, Harley. You're guilty of all the bloodshed on earth back to Abel. He told the people 2,000 years ago, these Pharisees that had synagogues and didn't have no temple, that's not in the old temples, in the Old Testament synagogues. And Jesus said, you had the commandments of men. He says, you're not my sheep. You're not Israelites. So we told them they killed Abel. How were they able to kill Abel when Abel was killed 3,000 years before that conversation they were having? Because they're walking around on flesh and blood bodies. Nobody believes Genesis 3:15. The Almighty himself said to the serpent, with Adam and Eve standing there, there's going to be hatred between you, the serpent, and the seed of the woman's serpent seed. And it goes all the way down to Revelation 12:17. The dragon was wroth with the remnant of the seed of the woman. How do you know who the seed of the woman is? Those are the Israelites. Because they keep the commandments, John. and they also believe in Jesus Christ as a king. And there's one more thing, how you can prove a true Israelite. God never talks about white people in the Bible, John. Here it comes. They got us buffaloed. White people are bad. White people are scared. But when most of them find out they're not white people, look in 1 Samuel 17:42. Goliath hated David, John, because he was ruddy. Ruddy means you blush red in the face. If you blush red in the face and you look white, still be you're not a white person.
Let me respond to some of these things, because you've got a lot going on here, right?
Adam in the Hebrew means he's a ruddy man. So the thing is, once the ruddy people walking around, John, blushing red, find out they're the true Israelites, sons of God, just like Adam and Jesus, that's when the power's going to come in to go after them.
Well, let me respond to some of this stuff. I agree to a high percentage, but not completely. But let me make some points here. And I'll start off with Israel. Our founding fathers believed that they were New Israel by the creation of the government that they were creating, because they created this government just like Israel, the same way Israel was created back in 1600 BC. Okay, we formed our government. Jefferson is what discovered this and formed our government out of the same thing, going back to the first five books of the Bible. And so they believe that we were the new Israel that the Bible speaks about. Now, the new Israel, ultimately, God does speak in Revelations about having a place prepared and that we'd move no more, okay? Because the cross, or Christianity particularly, you know, moved from country to country until America picked up on it, and we move no more. We hold the cross up, ultimately. We're a Christian nation. We're under the laws, the only nation under the laws of nature and nature's God, even though they have stolen that from us. We need
Where's the New Jerusalem? Jerusalem is spelled J-E-R-U-S-A.
Yeah, now, let me finish. The New Israel is what I'm talking about. But Jerusalem, there are two Jerusalems, Jerusalem above and Jerusalem below. One's a bondwoman, one's a free woman. I don't want to get too deep into this. We could do this on our Bible program if people want to talk about this. But nevertheless, Israel, okay, you got to remember, Israel, Israel has two different understandings of Israel. There's the corporate body and the spiritual body. You know, not all the people in Israel were saved people. They were not all the children of God. Even there was only a remnant chosen by God, okay, ultimately. But they were all part of the corporate body, okay? Now, that moved into when we come here to the New Testament side of things and we became the United States of America, our founding fathers, again, believed we were the new Israel because we were holding up the cross. Our courts were to be ruled over by nature's God, and in the Bible, that was Jesus Christ, the creator of this universe.
Make a note and
let me finish, because I want to cover all these things that you said.
I want to tell you about one more, how proof of what an Israelite is today. Go to Ezra chapter 9. You see, he was furious with the Israelites because they were cohabiting with other nations and races of people, and they're breaking away from the royal seed. What's the royal seed?
Okay, but let me go back, because I don't want to get too deep into that right now. Please.
All right, if you don't want to get into it now, but I'm trying to tell you, if you're a ruddy man.
Let me get these points, because we only got 15 minutes. You've covered a lot of things, and I want to comment on a lot of it. Okay?
All right.
So now with the new Israel, okay, that's one thing from a corporate standpoint, okay? But, you know, if you really want to know who Israel is, you can go back into the Old Testament, and you can go to Exodus. And the first thing that Moses said to Pharaoh, which God told him to say, is, "Let my son Israel go." S-O-N. Let my son Israel go. Now, who was he talking about? He was talking about the body of Christ, ultimately. Okay, he was talking about the true Jew, which is not just a Jew outward, but one is inward also, where the circumcision is that of the heart, not of the flesh. That's what he was talking about. So Israel, the true Israel, is not the United States of America. The true Israel is the body of Christ. And you would expect to find that in the churches. Now, the churches are corporate bodies. And inside a corporate body is the spiritual body, the body of Christ. As long as the body of Christ is in that church preaching the true gospel, that church has life. And that church is a sanctuary. And that sanctuary is a place where people get sanctified. Otherwise, your children would not be the children of God. We bring up our children as if they are true children of God, if we're a Christian family, a Christian household. God commands us to do it that way. But the point is this idea of Israel, who Israel is, it's a spiritual body. And then there's the corporate body, if you're looking at the church. And then there's the great apostasy, the greater falling away, which is in our time right now. Anybody paying attention and truly looking into the Bible, they will see that churches have a lot of problems. And they've always had problems, don't get me wrong, because if you go into the book of Revelation, the first three chapters, particularly 2 and 3, covers with the first seven churches. All seven churches that God speaks about there that are in Asia, they've all gone apostate. They're all gone. And that's been the nature of the problem, because that's where Satan makes his assault, is in the churches. So when church goes apostate, you know, God raises up other churches. The children of God still continue. He's going to build his church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And the churches he is building is the true church of God, which is the spiritual body, which is the body of Christ, anyone who is born again. So that's on the Israel side. We got to be careful when we talk about groups of people being Israel or something of that nature. But I want to go back to some of the things you had said concerning make a defense in the courts. Particularly, you're talking probably about town courts and village courts, because they're the ones that deal with tickets and different things like that. They're the ones that do most of the assault upon the people. Okay. Now, a lot of what you said there is true. I don't know that I disagree with much there. But I disagree with your strategy. And believe me, I've spent a lot of time in those courts. There was one case we spent, must have been a year, going back every month, going back into that court. And I was talking with Jerry. I said, this is insane. Keep going back here over. We don't get anywhere. And there was a lot of these courts you go into, they just shut you right down and they railroad you. Move on. And they're not going to tolerate the conversation at all. There is a book that's putting out for these judges on how to deal with people like us, okay? So I've learned, and I get my own strategy, and I laid my strategy out in the course that I taught, which is court access and the common law, and the education starts here. But you can find some of this information, I believe, on the law, and come over to court forms and process. I think you can find some of my strategy in here. My strategy is very simple. If I get pulled into any of those courts, first of all, we got to know one thing. They're nisi prius courts. They don't even understand what that means. Okay? But if you call them an administrative court, they understand what that means. And an administrative court is a nisi prius court, which means unless first is what nisi prius means, unless first. Okay? In other words, that court has no authority, no power, anything over you unless you agree first. Okay? That's what an nisi prius court is, and they do everything they can to try to get you to agree to that court system. Once you walk in and make a plea, you agree to their system, and that's a problem. So the whole thing is a sham. It's really... it's a crime against the people. They're criminal.
But Jack, can I make a comment? Can I make a comment, please?
Let me finish, and then you can talk some more. Just think of what you want to say. But anyway, when you walk into that court and you understand they don't have authority over you. Now, number one, it's not possible. It's an impossibility for them to give you due process. You cannot get due process in a court that operates under statutes, because you can't get due process through that. You're already found guilty by the code they're applying against you, and usually some officer who will say that, yeah, he broke this statute, and you're done. You're just guilty, and that's it, okay? And they put people in jail up to a year, and they get away with that because they say that they can do this lawfully because it's not an infamous crime, only an infamous crime. They claim that an infamous crime means something that requires something over a year in jail, where an infamous crime, again, is one that requires any kind of a jail sentence. But again, being a nisi prius court, they do not have, and this is in law, this is in their statutes, this is in, you go into Black's Law, you can look this up. A nisi prius court does not have the power to fine or incarcerate. They can't take your money. They can't take your things. They can't take your house. They can't put you in jail. They don't have that power. Okay? They only have the power within their jurisdiction. Usually it's a traffic court. Usually those that has to do with commercial activity. And there's a certain amount that they can do there. And it's questionable on whether they can, well, I think they can probably fine individuals, but that's questionable. You know, we'd have to think that a little more further out because, again, you can't take someone's things without going through due process, and those courts don't give you due process. Due process is that which proceeds according to the common law, number one, which is natural law, and it gives you the opportunity to bring your case before the people, not some judge who's really, he works for you. You know, he's the servant. We're the masters. But they treat us as if we're the servants and they're the masters. Okay? So my strategy is pretty simple. I go in just like a lawyer. I never even go to the court. I write papers and send them in. Okay? And my papers, basically, I'll lay at the first paper is I'll let them know that I'm, let me see if I can find a list. I think I have a list here on this page, and so people can look at this and use this strategy. I'm pretty sure I put it here also. I know we have it in the course. Let's see, memorandums, downloads, no. Court enforcement, no. Instruction forms, habeas corpus, no. Forms, move your case for cause. Okay, notice of removal. Okay, well, I don't have all the details here, but basically what it is you come into traffic court. Here it is. Okay, I come in with an appearance ticket. Okay, that's the first order of business. I come in just like a lawyer would come in and make an appearance on a paper. Okay, you can open up this paper and take a look at this is how a notice of special appearance. Please take notice that my name hereby appears in the above entitled commercial code violation, or whatever it might be, by the undersigned who is appearing on his own behalf in this commercial traffic court, or whatever court it might be, complaint by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the court. All papers in this action is to be addressed to the address below, and you give the information, so on and so forth. It's one page, okay? So that's the first paper that I put in. Now, with that paper, I also go in and I put a notice of motion, okay? And a notice of motion lays out the fact that I'm going to make a notice of motion in this court right now. So you want to have a notice of motion. Okay, the next paper that I put in is a verified jurisdictional challenge. Okay, so I challenge the jurisdiction and I lay this out and I swear to this paper. Okay, this is a sworn affidavit. My state, my county, whatever, your name, etc. And people could read through this and see how this works. But the bottom line is, as you're going through challenging the jurisdiction, okay, they can't prove jurisdiction. You've put all this paper onto the record, okay, which they just throw away. When you go into court, the judge said, well, if you go into court, because I don't go to court anymore, not those courts, okay, if you do go into those courts, the judge said, well, no, I haven't seen those papers. They're not in the file here, and I don't know nothing about that. And I used to give them a copy, so it doesn't work, okay, because they play their stupid games, they play dumb, and what they do is the papers don't go into the, sometimes they'll send my papers back. But it doesn't matter. I already certified them to the mail. They received them. Now, the other thing I do, okay, is you have an affidavit of default, okay, which is the next thing you want to do. Because they're defaulting because, number one, once jurisdiction is challenged, they must it must be heard, okay? And if you go into court and you tell them that, you'll say, well, I just heard it now, and we have jurisdiction. I just decided. Let's move on, buddy. You see, so you got to be careful. Okay, again, I don't go to court no more, not to any of those courts. I don't walk into them at all. I just file papers. Now, and I'll file all my papers at one shot, okay? And then I'll file an affidavit of default right after that because they're going to default. They're not going to hear the case, and there's no affidavit coming from the prosecutor that rebuts my affidavit, so I've already won the case. Okay, you have to wait 30 days to go past that to get that point, okay? So you file the affidavit of default. Okay, then they try to move you on and want you to come back on a certain date or to come, and again, I haven't gone into court yet, but they want me to come into court. I then move it into state court for cause for denial of due process, and I make my battle there. Okay, I serve it to the sheriff so they can't give me any problem saying I didn't serve it correctly. It's been served, put on the facts, gave them an affidavit. There's not a thing they can do about that. They can't argue the point. They'll try to say, well, I didn't make a cause of action, but I'll be clear with two or three causes of action. My main cause of action is a denial of due process. And if I don't win this in the state court, I take it through the appellate court in the state court. If I don't win it there, I move it to federal court for cause. They all denied me due process. All of them. All three courts. Whether it be the town court, then the state court, and the appellate court, and then now you're in the federal court. So you have a lot of bites at the apple as you move along. And I have a case right now that they're stuck. I get two of them. They're stuck. They can't move anywhere. And I just filed just recently, I just filed a default on one of them. I'm getting ready to file a default on the other one. Okay, because they haven't answered. And time has gone by. So that's the best. You see, if you all go argue in that court, even if you win, there's no record of it. It doesn't help. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything. You want to work. You want to win up on the state court or the federal court. Then you have a record on the records, and then it's a case that you can refer to. That's number one. But the thing is that you're just not going to get any. Once in a while, someone gets through those courts on the town level, the village level, and the judge gets a little concerned, or maybe, you know, he doesn't want to deal with the problem, and he throws the case out, and so it's a big win, and so on and so forth. Once I move into state court, they owe me money. I'm going after every violation that they violated me for, $1,000 face value of Morgan silver dollars. Right now, what's that, $30,000 or something like that? I don't know what an ounce of silver goes for, $30 or $40. I think it's $45, but whatever it is, okay? So, and when I filed this last one, back then it was only like $20-some-odd. Now it's like $40, so, you know, money keeps going up. Inflation brings it up. So, but the bottom line is I sue the prosecutor and I sue the judge. And I strip him of who he is. I use his name. I don't call him a judge in my lawsuit. You know, I use his name in the lawsuit. He doesn't have a title. Same thing with the prosecutor. I don't give him a title. I use his name. These people ran a court. It was a sham. They denied me of my due process. That was a violation. And I hit him for every violation I can. Usually it's one or two. Denial of due process is the key. Okay. The Fifth Amendment, you get them for the Seventh Amendment, and I think you even get them for the Fourth Amendment, I don't remember, but anyway, the Fifth and the Seventh. So now, if you get them for 2 points, that's $2,000 face value, Morgan silver dollars for the judge, that's right now $80,000, 45 and 45 is 90,000, I'm sorry, $90,000. And the same thing, same 2 points for the prosecutor. You're looking at $180,000, because the moment I move that out of that court, I'm suing for damages, and my damages at that point is $4,000 in face value, Morgan silver dollars, which is, $180,000. And I'm going to move that through the system. And that's where I'm at right now with a particular case. I got another one moving right behind it. So that's the best way to win in those cases, in those courts, and because you're not going to get anywhere with them. You get a win. Like I said, occasionally you get a win. We've had a couple, you know, where they just threw us out of the court. I went to family court one time. They couldn't wait to get rid of us. You know, we were just so many thorns. But we spent a lot of time, and there still was no win on it, you know. It was just a lot of aggravation and loss of time. If we took it to the federal courts, at least we could have been compensated, you know. So anyway, back to you for the final few minutes. Nobody else is in the queue anyway, and I'll give you a couple of minutes to close down on.
I had one case, Spencer Port, New York, Judge Morenti. I was arrested. The cop falsely accused me of threatening him. I didn't threaten the cop. I said, Almighty God, Yahweh's going to kick your ass because he was doing something illegal outside the police department right next to the court. But anyway, the judge put me in jail for an hour and a half. That was Judge Morenti. And a public defender brought me an hour and a half. I went before the judge. Oh, how you doing, Walt? Like, I was just in the court about 2-3 hours ago. And he says, I want you to take this attorney right here. And I said, I'm not going to take this attorney. He says, I'm going to write it down. I said, no, no. I says, Almighty God, Yahweh is my counsel. So he writes it down. He actually wrote it down, John. He said, okay, what we're going to do here is you're going to come back in 2 weeks. I'm not going to give you any paperwork. And if you don't come back, there's going to be a warrant out for your arrest.
That's what I did. That's why I don't go to court. That's why I don't go to court. I don't go to court. Those courts.
How good. John, I'm going to tell you how it works.
I move them before they can even make those decisions, and that's what I tell people that they should do. If you're going to play with the courts and try to beat them, you need to move it out of that court. But
well,
go ahead.
I'm going to tell you how it can be. It doesn't matter where you go once you've got the right a weapon. Okay, I'm going to show you what the weapon is. Okay, so what happens next is I go back 2 weeks later. The court was full, and I had to wait till I was the last person in the court because they know what I was going to say probably, so they want no balls to hear it.
I know, they did it, all of us.
And this time they got a different public defender, a real tall guy, and Judge Morenti says, I want you to take this attorney right here. And I said, Judge, no, I'm not going to take that attorney. In other words, I told him something like, I want this man fired. I don't want him. I told you, Judge Morenti, that Yahweh is my attorney, our counsel. So here's what he does, John. He writes that down. He says, okay, I want you to come back in 2 weeks. If you don't come back, we're going to have you arrested. No paperwork, though, John. So that's okay. So, okay, then what happens is, in the middle, 1 week later, I found out that the priority mail I was sending to him about evidence showing a lot of corruption going on in this case, about this young man, his car was stolen when he was in a traffic case stuff. I was trying to help him, right?
We can't get too deep, so try to wind it down because we're past 11.
Right, the postmaster and the judge were involved in stealing the mail. So I went to downtown in Rochester, New York, the public defender's office, talked to this lady, Miss Ball, right, attorney. I tried to tell him in the bus there, Mr. Stubbe, I got the recorder on. He's blocking my voice, John, like a little kid. So he kept on going, so you couldn't hear it on my thing. So I just stopped. And I looked right at him. This is the top guy in the law office, John. And here's what I told him. I said, if you don't stop this, Almighty God, Yahweh is going to remove you from the earth. I yelled in his face. He didn't call the cops, and then he just stared at me, and he didn't answer. I yelled a second time, and his answer, John, was this. Anything else, Mr. Wojak? No. So I went back the next week later. That was 2 weeks. Miss Ball's there waiting for me, a beautiful attorney. I said, good evening, Miss Ball. She says, oh, well, I'm the last one in court again. This is the end of this, John. So Judge Morenti says, oh, you know each other. I said, Judge Morenti, how do you expect me to pay attention to when you set me up with this beautiful woman like this? He laughed, and his clerk up there was hiding her face. She was laughing so hard. So here's what he says. I want you to take this attorney. I said, Judge Morenti, this is the last time I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to take it. Almighty God, Yahweh is my attorney. So that's what he did, John. What I'm going to do here is how he tricks everybody.
You're going to have to bring this to an end. Cause
I am. He says, I'm going to wait 6 months to see what happens in this matter. He didn't say about me or anybody. And if I don't hear any more about it, I'm dismissing his case. Not only did he dismiss it, John, I wrote him an email 6 months later saying, you're not dismissing it till the truth comes out. But I found out he ditched it because I applied for an apartment. They had checked my background. There's no record I was ever arrested, John. But you went in there with the kingdom of Almighty God. And you stand up and say, I'm not under this jurisdiction because...
Well, there couldn't be nothing concerning an arrest until the court has come to a conclusion. Otherwise, they can't have a record of that. Just being arrested doesn't make you guilty of anything. In any event, though, you know, this is kind of a unique thing in this particular case. I definitely would not suggest for anyone to try that kind of a strategy. I think they're going to get in trouble. And judges are different. And first of all, most of the judges that I used to go before dealing with this problem, they just get frustrated and then they just railroad you. Okay? They just railroad you and there's not a thing you could do. You get stuck in a situation unless you get out of that court quick and move it to a court of law. Now, you're still not going to get to a court of law because they don't exist in America no more. You know? That's what our battle is all about. But they have the appearance of a court of law. But you got to get out of that court real quick.
Just one more. Call Judge Morenti. Tell him about me. Here's what I told you. I said, Judge, Almighty God Yahweh is going to take you behind the woodshed, your behind, right in the courtroom with the sheriffs who were standing around me. You know what he did, John? He didn't hesitate to have him put him in jail. He raced down in there like this, duly noted. That means this, John. He has to make that payment, duly noted.
People are not going to get the same results you got. I'm telling you right now, it'd be very rare to get any kind of result like that.
And again,
we got to end the program. I'm sorry, Walt. We got to end the program.
All right. Okay. I'm trying to listen to you Wednesday night at the Bible study.
All right.
All right. Thank you for letting me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.